Hi, I'm Dr. Lisa Dunn, and thanks for joining me here today on The Communication Architect. Each week, we'll share content that will empower you to grow your personal leadership capacity through the development of communication competencies that build emotional health and relational resilience. We'll unpack some practical applications of interpersonal, intrapersonal, family, and organizational communication. And we'll connect with stories of transformation that will inspire you to achieve personal and social change. Now, let's build the scaffolding you need to become a communication architect. Hello, everyone, and welcome to the show. I'm Dr. Lisa Dunn, a lifelong homeschooling parent, author, and president of Chula Vista Christian University, a four-year university that centers on mentor-driven, Bible-based, debt-free higher education. Visit us at cvcu.us to see how we are taking back education for the next generation. If you're new to the show, be sure to scroll back on my podcast for some tips on breaking free from the toxic traits of traditional education and establishing some habits that will reset your family and your organizational culture. Pastors, if you'd like to know more about how you can play a vital role in rescuing the outsourced generation, go to academicrescuemission.com and click the Start an Academy tab. We can have your church-based campus running anywhere in the U.S. within 4 weeks. Parents, we have three levels of support for you: church-based support classes, our annual conference, and our Socratic mentor-driven debt-free college programs. You can earn your bachelor's degree in political science, engineering, psychology, pre-med, education, business communication, and much, much more. Get all the details at cvcu.us. If you're not getting our newsletter yet, sign up on the website at cvcu.us. Learn more about our options, including our upcoming, drum roll please, grad school options. Join us for visit day on April 16th and experience our mentor-driven, faith-based, debt-free model in person. RSVP today at cvcu.us. That's Chula Vista Christian University. Well, shout out this week to Foothills Church. I had the joy of meeting with their leadership team, and I am so impressed with the tremendous work they're doing in San Diego County. You know, we talked many times on the show about the need for churches to come together around the central mission of shifting the culture for the next generation. And Foothills is not only reaching out in education, but also in community, with 32 interconnected interdenominational churches meeting together, supporting and encouraging one another on the journey. And that is the church with a capital C. So if you're in East County, San Diego, be sure to check out their work at foothillschurch.org. Well, this is the week of celebrating love, so I thought we'd take some time to talk about this powerful human emotion and how it affects us interpersonally as well as organizationally. We'll examine some common misconceptions about love and look at its purpose and its impact on our lives beyond the world's point of view on the holiday of hearts. In his 1936 bestseller, How to Win Friends and Influence People, Dale Carnegie shares 6 tools that he believed would help kind of win over the affections of others. They were expressing a genuine interest in others, smiling, remembering people's names, becoming a good listener, talking about the other person's interest, and making other people feel genuinely important. Now, of course, like any persuasive kind of technique, these tips could be used to manipulate others. But when they're taken from the right heart and a healthy relational perspective, they can also be used to strengthen interpersonal relationships. And of course, the core of these tools is the perceived expression of love. Love is perhaps the most profound and impacting of all human emotions. In his address to the annual convention of the American Psychological Association in 1958, Harry Harlow, you remember us talking about his monkeys, Harry Harlow's monkeys, a psychologist at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, presented his findings on the social isolation of rhesus monkeys. And in his research, he showed that without a base of what he called love from their mothers, that baby monkeys wouldn't feel secure enough to perform normal monkey behaviors like warding off threats or exploring their primate worlds. And these studies were replicated, at least in part replicated, in John Bowlby's findings on the secure base in 1950, the World Health Organization study maternal care and mental health. And there are, of course, more recent studies. There's one called the Aspen Neurobehavioral Conference that's really fascinating. But Bowlby demonstrated that the deprivation of maternal love, especially in the first 2 years of life, would result in long-term cognitive and socio-emotional challenges later in life. Those studies were then later expanded by Mary Ainsworth in 1965 with her work on human attachment and what you may have heard, the strange situation procedure. I know it sounds strange, but she analyzed the impact of the different types of relationships that an infant might have with its mother on levels of stress that it was subjected to, the mother leaving and coming back. And children who were what was called securely attached to the mother, like Harlow's monkeys, would explore their world freely while mom was present. They were upset when she left, and they responded favorably when she returned. This is a normal human response. This is secure attachment. This is love. And as we think about the workplace environment and the many frailties that we all possess within the workplace environment, I think we would do well to appropriate that love and that grace to our youngest employees, especially those who may not have had that secure base. They might not have had healthy attachments. They may or may not feel ambitious and courageous about approaching new tasks or meeting new people. As neuroscience continues to show, the presence of healthy adult relationships can heal the wounds of the past. So as leaders, it's our responsibility to demonstrate that healing power of love. Now, we know today that love has both a physiological and a psychological expression. In the book, The General Theory of Love, University of California, San Francisco psychiatry professors Lewis, Amini, and Lannan analyze the role of the brain's limbic system, which is the area of the brain that houses emotion, behavior, motivation, long-term memory, smell. And they looked at this impact on love, attachment, and social bonding. And they demonstrated in their study that our nervous systems, rather than being kind of these emotional silos, are actually physiologically attuned to the people we're closest to. The people we're closest to matter. Mentors matter. Our relationships matter. We see these behaviors evidenced in the mother-child bond. We've talked before about the parasympathetic acceleration of the heart, where the baby smiles, the mother's heart rate accelerates. There's this emotional and physiological connection to love. We've talked about the bonding hormone oxytocin, which is elicited in both romantic and non-romantic relationships. Because love is verbal and non-verbal. Remember the song, Love is a Verb. We can offer support through our words and our actions. And in the workplace, we can demonstrate love when, in simple ways, like when we're kind, when we're considerate toward others. Those can be verbal displays. They're not limited to verbal displays. But we can also demonstrate love when we're responsive and positive toward others, when we give them the value of our attention, not staring incessantly at our phones. In my research on Gen Zs, I found that many of the resounding reasons young generations don't feel valued at work, which is a big challenge right now, is because they weren't responded to, they weren't heard, they weren't respected. Our younger workers, and of course all generations need support, but especially our younger workers need our words and our actions to offer value, which translates into love. Now, when we think about the popular verse that's so commonly read at weddings, 1 Corinthians 13, we often, in our heads, I think, connect this idea to romantic love, but there's actually no specific delineation to romantic love in the passage. The love chapter and the word that's translated in the love chapter is not eros, but agape, and Strong's Greek defines that word as love, affection, goodwill, benevolence, brotherly love. So it's a non-romantic implication for the expression of love. Consider the impact of that kind of love on the workplace environment. Think about love, affection, goodwill, benevolence, brotherly love. Think about those in the context of not just our spouse, but think of those in the context of our workplace relationships as we look at verses 1-7. If I speak in the tongues of men and angels, but have not love, I'm a noisy gong or a clanging cymbal. And if I have prophetic powers and understand all mysteries and knowledge, and I have all faith so as to remove mountains, but have not love, I am nothing. If I give away all I have, and if I deliver my body up to be burned, but have not love, I gain nothing. Love is patient and kind. Love doesn't envy or boast. It's not arrogant or rude. It doesn't insist on its own way. It's not irritable or resentful. It doesn't rejoice in wrongdoing, but rejoices with the truth. Love bears all things, hopes all things, endures all things. Love never ends. This is actually the same type of love, agape love, that's extolled in Matthew 5:44. I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you. You may feel like at work you have enemies who are intentionally persecuting you, or maybe they're just driving you crazy. These human behaviors are common in every setting, from the classroom to the boardroom. And learning to love those enemies, quote unquote, and those unlovables will bring an ultimate transformation, not only in them, but also in us. We have to learn to demonstrate this consistent agape love for our, for not only our families, but also for our employees, for our youngest workers, that will help them reset that balance of insecurity and anxiety many of them are facing today. We talked before about the stats on the youngest workers in the marketplace today. The National Alliance on Mental Illness said that there's a crisis of mental health on college campuses. We have 5 million students across the nation dealing with anxiety, depression, emotional health. The second leading killer for college students says the American College Health Association is suicide. The Chronicle of Higher Education has called colleges Prozac campuses and have said that students have this overwhelming need to seem flawless. They don't want even their closest friends knowing that they have flaws and frailties. And of course, we all have flaws and frailties, and we have to face the reality that we don't live in this airbrushed perfectionism of social media, but it really has impacted our collective cultural brains. And it's hard to pick up on some of that underlying sadness when you're working with the younger generation. There's that cool exterior that Stanford University professors have termed the duck syndrome, where we see the outside, they look like they're gliding along effortlessly, displaying these graceful displays of beauty. And then underneath the surface, the duck's leg is paddling frantically just to keep the duck afloat. And in the same way, because today's younger generations are so accustomed to keeping up an image and pretending they have it all together, it can be difficult to tell what they're really feeling. When I, in my work and my research with both millennials and Gen Zs, and now of course Alpha is coming up, creating these behaviors head on by making environments that are open, accepting, loving, that nurture progress over perfection. The younger generations are terrified of failure, and failure obviously is a very real part of life. So stable, unconditional love helps to desensitize them to that irrational fear. And of course, I realize that a healthy workplace culture doesn't solve the long-term strains of parental dysfunction that have to be addressed if we're going to heal as a nation, but these strategies do help promote health and healing in our young adult population. It's a band-aid approach of sorts, but it is still a start. So as we x-ray our organizational cultures and we think about the signs and look for the signs of this kind of agape love, we would do well to remember the words of Ephesians 4:32. Be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another as God in Christ forgave you. If we want to see lasting cultural change, we have to be willing to accept responsibility for problems we may or may not have created in our generation if we're to see true hope and healing in the next one. You know, one of the keys to assisting young adults in building foundations for growth and change is paradigm shifting. That is demonstrating to them that growth and change are possible, sharing our testimonies, our own stories of growth and change. And once we embrace that construct, once we take responsibility for stewarding the lives of those in our realm of influence who are younger than us, we can begin to recognize not only the family, but also the workplace as a hub of healing. Of course, in our culture, there are constant competing demands for our loyalty. So we have to develop this internal spot, this anchor of control, a compass that will guide us in the valuation of what's valuable, what's real, what's worthwhile. And for many of our younger generations, this internal focus of control has never been fully developed. So if we approach workplace relationships from the concept of forming, that is the word transform, what's being formed, what's changing, what's being fashioned through these dyadic relationships in modern culture, we can see the butterfly effect. We can see the relational world between adult dyads being affected by the viability of the relationship, and that relationship affecting other relationships in the individual sphere of influence. You know, an example we talked about before on the show is if there's a man driving to work after having a stressful argument with his spouse, he in some way will allow that stressful experience to spill over in the lives of others, whether that's on the freeway, in the parking lot, his place of employment. That relational distress is carried from the private world to the public world And that creates responses that can set off a chain of events, a negative butterfly effect of sorts. And if we think about the opposite, you know, when we're sowing into people, we're pouring into people, we're encouraging them daily as the Bible commands us to do, that can set off a positive butterfly effect in interconnected relationships. And that framework of a sociological viewpoint is very beneficial here, because the workplace dyad, like the marriage dyad, it's not just a relationship in a vacuum. It's a microcosm of the whole. It's a segment of society whose long-term relational health or disease will naturally spill over into life and culture. When a workplace relationship is in distress, the tension affects other aspects of an individual's realm of influence, and that ill health will affect the larger culture for better or for worse. Our role in what is forming in transformation, what is forming might in large part depend on the health and satisfaction of not only the family relationships, but the workplace relationships. One of my professors in my PhD program, Dr. Barnett Pierce, the late Dr. Barnett Pierce, said in his book, Making Social Worlds, that we're creating, we're forming. He asked, what kinds of worlds are we making? Do we leave a place better or worse for having our influence in it? And that question I asked in the book, The Multigenerational Marketplace, from a position of interpersonal influence and responsibility. When adults refuse to offer emotional support to one another, whether that's their own or other generations, whether that's through immaturity or ignorance, a new world is being shaped. What kind of world are we making in our families, in our organizations? Stronger relational dyads have an impact on the society where they live. And to some degree, obviously, the health of a society as a whole can depend on the relational health of its citizens. I talked earlier about a church in East County, San Diego, that is working together with 32 other churches. There is a strengthening of community. There's an encouraging. There's a leaving people better than you found them, rather than a siloing and competition factor there. There's a connection and there's a camaraderie, and that shifts the culture of not only East County, but San Diego County and your county. When we work together as Christian entities, our goal is not blaming, illuminating, ignoring the causes of stress and distress in our younger generations, but helping them find health and balance and well-being when they're experiencing emotional distress. This is love. Bowlby states that attachment relationships are, quote, a principal key to the mental health of the next generation. So he says, we need to know all we can about their nature and about the manifold social and psychological conditions that influence development for better, for worse. And of course, he says attachment is not confined to children. And yes, the family system is where it starts. Absolutely. We talk about that on the show all the time. And Bowlby and many others were kind of kept at bay for many years by older generations that wouldn't take responsibility for negatively impacting the trajectory of the next generation. And I see that shifting right now. I shared last week about my experience in DC, where I had the privilege of being able to stand in the gap for the next generation for education, and saw congressmen and leaders around the world, literally leaders from nations, former prime ministers and leaders of nations, who were recognizing we have to take responsibility for where the youngest generation is, whether we caused it ourselves or unwittingly, unknowingly, ignorantly, or whether we had nothing to do with it personally. We have to be able to take responsibility to help bring some healing and hope there. And the workplace, especially in the home, the focus of our efforts should be to build on these foundations from the perspective of healthy interpersonal relationships. This begins in the home, our own homes, and then out of the overflow of that arena, we can stand on a secure base and offer hope to a hopeless and anxious generation. This is love. So we do well to consider what kind of world we're making with our sometimes graceless conversations. We do well to model love and respect from a place of authenticity and a place of good reputation, both in the home and in the workplace. We've talked before about the public shout out, which is the opposite of gossip, publicly proclaiming people's great qualities. And I know this, I know Timothy, obviously Timothy said that a leader in his organization must have children that are not wayward, but obey their parents with a healthy respect. That firstborn fruit of a healthy cycle of love and authority and nurture and admonition. It begins in the home and overflows to our other realms of influence. So let's start their parents. Let's start their grandparents. Let's start looking at our own homes and the overflow of our homes. And then out of that overflow, let's impact the culture around us. This is love. As employers, we can't obviously fully reparent younger workers. We have to strategize ways to aid those who are in distress so they can learn coping strategies and healing strategies that will strengthen their relationships as well as their own levels of both personal and professional performance. This is true agape love. We can't look the other way. I think as we look out at the generations around us and we say, you know, I know an older generation would say, I'm going to close off my heart, but I want to end with this thought from C.S. Lewis from The Four Loves. He said, to love at all is to be vulnerable. We can protect our heart by giving it to no one, by distracting ourselves with luxuries or hobbies. But he says, in the end, the result will be tragic. Lock it up safe, Lewis says, in a casket or coffin of our selfishness. But in that casket, safe, dark, motionless, airless, it will change. It will not be broken. It will become unbreakable, impenetrable, irredeemable. Learning to love and serve others is not only a key to the betterment of our organizations, but the root of our own personal growth and development as individuals. So when my daughter was five, we were working on memorizing the love scripture and the fruits of the spirit in her homeschool kindergarten class. And later that week, I found this little to-do list on the front page of her puppy dog journal. And the entry said this: love God, love mom, love dad, love Ethan, her brother, and love Bailey, her dog. And I think that pretty much sums it up. Let's love our employees and our families and our churches with a mission, looking at those love chapter fruits and extending grace. Even if we weren't part of the problem, let's endeavor to be part of the solution. And if we apply these principles, we can become conduits of hope and healing to the next generation. We all know that the next generation needs our support. Instead of training up joyful, creative, faith-filled scholars, our government education system is churning out atheist armies. This is the most anxious, depressed atheist generation in the history of our nation. We have to shift the educational and spiritual ecosystem for the sake of the next generation. Parents and grandparents, as you're considering your scholastic options for the coming year, there are so many choices available to you once you step off the big yellow prison bus. Our local answer to the global crisis is Chula Vista Christian University. Through our inquiry-based model, we are watching the culture shift. Parents and students, you can join us for our next visit day on April 16th, where you'll experience the inquiry-based, mentor-driven model of higher education in person. CVCU is debt-free, faith-based support that is not yoked to a woke government system. You can learn more at cvcu.us, where you can RSVP for that next visit day on April 16th. Pastors and church leaders, I am calling on churches across the United States to be part of the solution. Pastors, you can go to ARM, the Academic Rescue Mission, at academicrescuemission.com to arm your congregation against pagan indoctrination. Don't forget to check out my latest book on the 12 toxic traits of traditional education. Outsourced: Why America's Kids Need an Education Revolution is available in print and on Kindle. I know we were out for a long time. We're back stocked up. So thank you for everybody who's emailed, texted. When will the book be back in stock? It's back. You can find all of our blogs, books, and podcasts on the homepage at cvcu.us. That's Chula Vista Christian University. Again, I'm Dr. Lisa Nunn, and thanks for joining me on today's show. I'll be back next week with more tips and tools of the trade. We'll see you then. Thanks again for joining us here on The Communication Architect. If you have questions about today's episode, or if there are topics you'd like to see us address, send your comments via Instagram to @DrLisaDunn or via email to contact@drlisadunn.com. That's DrLisaDunn.com. And remember, strategic communication will help you build greater emotional health and relational resilience. So don't miss the next episode. I'm Dr. Lisa Nunn, and I look forward to talking with you next time right here on The Communication Architect.